Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
If the pro-lifers had had their way, America would be a browner and blacker place than it is today. And the progressive people who have had their way on abortion ever since Roe v. Wade are creating a whiter America.
People will say, well, we need to be merciful people. We need to forgive Carson King. We should very much avoid saying that we need to forgive him, because all that does is legitimize the mob.
The church is not an abstraction. It's a real place. And that is, of course, necessary because of the way the Lord meets us. He meets us in his word and sacrament. He meets us through physical means, and that means we have to have a place to go to receive them.
If I take a practice from, let's just say, a Baptist church, and I incorporate that into a Lutheran church, I'm actually incorporating a Baptist practice that is birthed out of Baptist theology.
This is Ezra from Louisville, Kentucky. And my mom loves issues, etc.
And my mom loves issues, etc.
Well, I suppose there is a first time for everything. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear a case about a Louisiana law that has to do with admitting privileges of abortion doctors from abortion clinics. And this is, as far as I know, the first time that this court has heard an abortion case of this kind of import. And with the makeup of the court as it is currently, what will that mean for this Louisiana law and for the larger legal issues surrounding abortion in the United States? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon, October the 11th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about a Supreme Court case from a Louisiana law on abortion. Margo Cleveland, senior contributor to The Federalist, will be our guest up first. A little bit later, Pastor Christopher Jackson will join us. We're going to talk about the moral accountability. He says it's the extreme moral accountability of secular culture. It's This Week in Pop Christianity with Pastor Chris Roseborough, Fighting for the Faith. We'll talk about the missing Christ in the Scriptures, featuring megachurch pastor Jensen Franklin. And then since it's Friday, it's time to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. In the last half hour of the program, we have our four soundbites assembled. We will play them for you. After you have heard them, you give us a call, 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or vote at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Your votes will decide which of the soundbites will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Joining us to talk about the Supreme Court hearing a Louisiana abortion case, Margo Cleveland. She's a regular guest, an attorney, and graduate of the Notre Dame Law School. She served for 25 years as a permanent law clerk for a federal appellate court judge, adjunct instructor for the College of Business at Notre Dame, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled, What You Need to Know About the Major Abortion Cases the Supreme Court Just Took. Margo, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks so much for having me.
You say that this case, June Medical Services v. Gee, is significant in two major ways. What are those?
So in this case, the Supreme Court is going to be looking at a Louisiana law that requires doctors who perform abortions to have admitting privileges at a nearby hospital. And one of the first ways the case is going to be significant is it's one of the abortion cases that's going to be heard before the Supreme Court after we have a new composition of justices. So we no longer have a Justice Kennedy, and we now have a Justice Gorsuch and a Justice Kavanaugh. So the first way is to show us how those justices are going to take a look at the case. And the second way is that the Supreme Court is actually also considering whether abortion providers and abortion clinics actually have the right to challenge that law. And that's something that they have not looked at in, I think, almost 40 years, since maybe the 70s or the 80s, when they indicated that abortion doctors, they have standing to challenge the laws on the basis of a woman's constitutional right to choose, or their so-called right to choose. And this case, the state of Louisiana actually filed a cross petition and said to the Supreme Court, if you take this case, we want you to also decide whether or not the abortionists should have the right to present the women's claims. And here, the cross petition was amazing. It really laid out why it makes no sense to let the abortionists challenge these laws that are designed to protect the health and safety of the women. They walked through and talked about how one of the doctors had absolutely no training in medical school on abortions, abortion procedures, that he was fully trained by another one of the abortion doctors, that he had a degree from, boy, I can't even remember where it was, but it was a non-American medical school, and his specialty was family medicine, and I believe it was addiction. And he had never practiced, actually, even in family medicine. That was not unique. There were other doctors that were in, for instance, radiologists or were in that specialty, who were just being brought in and trained on how to perform abortions. And yet the Supreme Court has been allowing these doctors to argue against laws that are designed to protect women. So it's kind of like the fox guarding the hen house. So that's going to be really significant to see what the Supreme Court does with that issue.
So in other words, on that second point, mm-hmm. the Supreme Court is being asked to consider whether or not these abortionists have standing in these cases, period. Is that correct?
That's correct. And what standing means is the right to stand before the court and make the argument. If there is no standing, the court will throw out the entire case. It won't decide it, and they will wait for someone who is appropriate to challenge the law to do so. And standing is a constitutional concept that there has to be what's called a case or controversy. And it has to be the party who's involved in that case or controversy bringing it. And for decades, the courts have just assumed that abortionists or abortion clinics had what is called third-party standing, that they can stand in front of the court and make the argument on behalf of the women. But the petition did a great job saying that makes no sense. Usually third-party standing is where the interests are the same and they're looking out for the third party. Here, the doctors don't want to have this kind of extra safety mechanism in place. They want to be able to keep doing what they're doing without having these privileges.
How big of a blow would it be to cases like this if the court were to decide that the abortionist does not have standing?
I think it would be a pretty large blow because of the way that the abortion apologists go about challenging cases. What you will see is them marching straight from the legislative hall to the courthouse. So basically from Congress to the courthouse, that if they can't get their way at the Congress or the state legislative level, then they immediately file a suit. But that does not require them to actually present facts to show how people would be injured. And it would prevent these immediate actions. A woman would have to come forward and say, this is going to harm my right. And it would make it much more concrete that you could say, yeah, that we can see that would hurt. You know, I'm using their jargon because I obviously don't think that an abortion would ever be helpful to a woman. But I'm using their jargon that it's going to hurt their access to abortion. And I think it would be a pretty strong blow.
Why is the Texas law from 2016 and the previous decision of the Supreme Court on Whole Woman's Health v. Hellerstedt significant here?
So I think that Kavanaugh and Gorsuch have definitely changed the composition because they are both originalist judges And what we have is the replacement of, obviously, of Kennedy, who was a moderate. And moderate's really not the right terminology when you're talking about the court, because it's not supposed to be political. It's supposed to be, are you an originalist or are you a non-originalist? So he really did fit in the non-originalist frame, where he wasn't looking at the Constitution and what the original understanding is. And he would moderate between, you know, kind of the political liberal and the conservative liberal view. And so far it appears that we have Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, who are much more originalist in nature. But we also have John Roberts, who has in some ways indicated he's not so much of an originalist. And you saw things such as the Obamacare decision, where he kind of punted on it and came up with an excuse. And even though that's not looking at the original understanding of the Constitution, it's going beyond what was really before them, which is not typical of an originalist justice. So we've still got a ways to go on to see how they're going to apply the principles. And you also have to consider whether the original justice is heavily swayed by precedent. Are they willing to overturn wrong precedent, or do they believe that the court prudentially should continue to apply the precedent, even if it was inaccurate, to have kind of a certainty in the law?
Can you explain those concepts, stare decisis and controlling precedent, to sure, in a non-legal way, so that and sure, are, and explain, if you will, are they rules of the court or just kind of traditions of the court?
So stare decisis is a Latin phrase, which I believe it translates directly into stand by that which was decided. And the Supreme Court has the ability to make a ruling, a holding. And when it makes a holding, that's binding precedent on all lower courts. So the Texas case about admitting privileges, that was a binding rule on lower courts. The Louisiana case was different. So the same principle would apply, the same precedent, but it could apply differently if the facts are different. But if you take, obviously, the constitutional right to abortion that the Supreme Court invented in Roe and then modulated a little bit in Casey, that would be something if the Supreme Court looked at it. It's precedent, but the Supreme Court has the power to overturn its own precedent. Stare decisis is what lawyers will call a prudential principle. It isn't prudent for the court to overturn past precedent. They have the absolute right to do it, but again, it's a principle that should guide the justice's actions. And there are reasons why it's prudent not to overturn precedent. It gives an uncertainty to the law that people don't know what the law is going to be from one time to another. It holds the court into kind of a disregard because it makes it look like the court is not interpreting the law, but making it up, and that the composition of the court matters, which frankly is true, which is why you see everyone fighting over who is the Supreme Court justice and who will they be. So is this, when you say a matter of practice, it's a matter of practice, but it's also a prudential principle that the courts will always talk about, and it's a guiding principle. Different justices have different kind of views on it. So Justice Thomas does not really give much regard to that, that if a decision is wrong, he's often spoke of the need to correct it, whereas Justice Scalia was a little bit more deferential to past decisions and that would kind of guide the decision going forward. And yeah, it doesn't mean that they won't. It's just something to consider in deciding whether or not to overturn the decision.
We're talking with Margot Cleveland about the Supreme Court hearing a Louisiana abortion case. She says that Louisiana's case also will expose the dark underbelly of the abortion industry. We'll see how after this. Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
You're invited to Oktoberfest featuring the Waterloo German Band, Friday night, October 18th at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. Oktoberfest features a traditional German buffet dinner, silent and oral auctions, and of course, beer. Tickets are $15. Attendance is limited to 200. Proceeds benefit St. Paul Lutheran School, the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. Learn more and purchase tickets at school.stpaulhamel.org. Oktoberfest is sponsored in part by Valo Floor Covering, Alton Memorial Hospital, Bunker Hill Chiropractic Clinic and Bunker Hill Physical Therapy, Hoxie Hollow LLC, Be Dry and Be Wet Solutions, and Steve Schmidt Auto. Oktoberfest, Friday night, October 18th at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois.
They want women on and off the table in about 5 minutes and just start feeding them through. They usually have one doctor that's just going from room to room doing the abortions.
That's not the primary reason we pray for the sick, is that they get well. Our primary reason for praying for the sick is that they not lose faith.
I think churches need to be taking a lot more serious thought and stop just pretending that kids will be okay, you know, because the kids are not okay.
But the good news is that God did not abandon us, but rather God chose to join us in His Son, Jesus Christ.
In the next hour, we'll play Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Those four soundbites in their entirety, we'll play them for you. Then you'll give us a call, send us an email, a tweet, or go to our Facebook fan page, and your votes will decide which will be Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We're talking about the Supreme Court hearing a Louisiana abortion case. Margo Cleveland is our guest. Margo, you say that Louisiana chiming in on this case is going to expose the dark underbelly of the abortion industry. How so?
So the class petition that they filed illustrates in depth why it makes no sense to allow abortion doctors to be litigating these health and safety restrictions. Because, as I said, it's the fox guarding the hen house. And they go through and talk about the violations that these different clinics have had from a health and safety perspective, about the doctors who are performing those and questions about their qualifications. And what really struck me when I read the cross petition is how this really, really links up with the Klopfer case out of Illinois and Indiana. And as you and your listeners will remember, he was the most prolific abortion doctor out of Indiana. He died a little bit back, and his family going through discovered preserved fetal remains and over 2,000 of them. And I'm not sure if you saw the news, but they recently discovered he had more in the trunk of one of his cars that was stored somewhere. What a lot of people don't know is that he had stopped performing abortions in Indiana when his license was pulled. But even before that, he was forced to close down his Fort Wayne clinic because Fort Wayne's county, Allen County, passed a local ordinance saying that traveling doctors, which is what Klopfer was and which many abortion doctors are, they just travel a circuit. They're not really the doctors of the patient. They're just performing the abortions. They have no connection or relationship with these patients before or after. The county passed a law saying they have to have another doctor who will cover for them. Klopfer arranged for another doctor to cover. a doctor who had seen some of the women in the emergency room who had suffered from his sloppiness, leaving fetal parts with inside the women's bodies. And he had signed up and said, you know, he'll cover for Klopfer, until Klopfer then performed an abortion on a young rape victim and didn't report it. And at that point, the doctor said, I'm out of here. I'm not going to do this anymore. And that forced him to shut down the clinic in Fort Wayne. That's why he was, you know, why in part he wasn't performing abortions as long as he could have been. And it's those types of things that you will see the abortion clinics and the abortion doctors condemning as harming women's right to abortion. What they're doing is they're protecting women from these kind of doctors, doctors who have no competence in the area or have run in clinics in which they have safety violations, untrained professionals. And sometimes you're not going to know about how horrible things are until the end. And what I find fascinating also is when the Texas case went to the Supreme Court, that was right after around the time period of the Gosnell discovery. And the Supreme Court actually referenced that. And now we have another similar case coming out around the same time as the Klopfer. This isn't a fluke that we're seeing these kinds of discoveries, and we're finding that the state laws are ways that you can turn out and discover these kind of problems.
What does that whole complex of terrible discoveries, along with the Louisiana state's argument here, what does that do to the common talking point of the pro-abortionist, which is this decision should be between a woman and her doctor?
They have a lot of myths and talking points that don't have any reality in fact, and that's one of the big ones. We're not talking about a relationship between a woman and her doctor. And the class petition details how these women are being counseled by other doctors who are brought in just to do the pre-abortion counseling. They might meet the abortionist while they're under anesthetic, and then they won't see the abortionist afterwards. They'll be treated by someone else. This admitting privileges requirement is trying to establish at least some aftercare that the doctors, if there's a problem, can admit them to the hospital and care for them. There's no relationship. They're paying for a service, and there is someone who's already decided that they want to pay a doctor. It's not the type of relationship where you go and you have a discussion with a doctor who knows your history, and yet that's the talking point, because it sounds a lot better than the reality.
I must wonder, because as you point out, the Louisiana argument also details a history on the part of some of the plaintiffs, violations and safety violations for both the women, obviously for the children too. It seems like a major legal misstep for abortion advocates to let this go all the way to the Supreme Court, knowing that these things are going to be heard in the Supreme Court, and especially by those who are going to permanently decide some of these issues.
Right. Well, I would say instead of it being a misstep on the abortion apologist standpoint, it was a brilliant step on the part of Louisiana, because the abortion doctors had filed the petition for cert. It was Louisiana who then responded and said, don't take that case, but if you do, this is what you need to be deciding. So the abortion advocates really didn't have a choice, because they had lost at the lower court, and they really couldn't let that decision stand if given their perspective. And they probably were blindsided when Louisiana came up with this point, which it was brilliant, because one, it's true that they shouldn't have standing, and two, it really does expose the underbelly. And they're going to have a hard time keeping that out of the media, because the justices will be pushing these questions at oral argument. Now, of course, the media can downplay it, but those points are going to be brought out and argued, and you're going to find amicus briefs, where friend of the court briefs, where they're detailing all of this, and it's going to expose the reality to a populace who likes to bury their heads in the sand, basically. They don't want to think about it. They would rather just live under the euphemisms that the left likes to create.
Do you think it's possible that even the left wing of the court that has been up to this point adamant in kind of a no-holds-bar support for abortion on demand might even be swayed by what is discovered here in this case?
No. They have no goal other than to keep abortion on demand available. You see that on votes. How often do they partial birth abortion? How often do you see them saying any limits at all? And no, they're not going to be swayed. If the science doesn't sway them, the fact that there are some violations isn't going to sway them. When we know that life from a scientific basis starts at the moment of conception and that viability is down to approximately 20 weeks, and yet they say, well, we can you have to have a health exception up till birth, and that could include mental health issues. No, nothing's going to persuade them other than God, but we'll have to leave that in his hands.
Margo Cleveland is an attorney and graduate of the Notre Dame Law School. She served as 25 years as a permanent law clerk for a federal appellate court judge. She's adjunct instructor for the College of Business at Notre Dame and senior contributor to The Federalist, author of a recent column titled, What You Need to Know About the Major Abortion Case the Supreme Court Just Took. Read it for yourself at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Thank you, Margo.
Thanks so much.
When we come back, have you noticed how puritanical progressive culture has become? How quick to judge, judgmental, and ready to pass sentence without mercy? We'll talk about the moral accountability of progressive culture with Pastor Christopher Jackson next.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the substitute organist service at churchmusicsolutions.com. Churchmusicsolutions.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, etc.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide word and sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is, lcmschaps@lcms.org.